Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. Her name is Diane Parrish, and she just launched her book. It's called Something Better. And I was lucky enough to be able to go to her book launch because we live in the same town. So I got a sneak preview of what we're going to talk about. But for now, I want to welcome Diane Parrish. She's an author, a mother, a wife, a grandmother, and a longtime Westport, Connecticut resident. So welcome, Diane.
Thank you, Hillary. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So how do you feel with this freshly, right? Tuesday was the launch, right?
Tuesday was the launch, yes. So 3 days, my book is 3 days old in the world now. Wow. It's amazing. It's amazing.
And it's your first book. It's your
my first book. Yes, absolutely. It is, you know, this, I had read that writing a book is one thing, but you have no idea how much goes into launching the book after you finish the thing. And I'm learning that. I am learning that even as we speak. It's very interesting.
Did you have any idea what you were getting into when you, how many years ago was that? 2009?
Oh gosh, so long ago.
No. Any idea? No.
No, because back then, to be perfectly honest, I never thought I'd finish the book. I thought, oh, this is just fun. I'll just write a little bit now and then when I feel like it, and I'll probably never finish the thing. But then I did finish the thing, and speak. It's very interesting.
Did you have any idea what you were getting into when you, how many years ago was that? 2009?
Oh gosh, so long
ago. No. Any idea? No.
No, because back then, to be perfectly honest, I never thought I'd finish the book. I thought, oh, this is just fun. I'll just write a little bit now and then when I feel like it, and I'll probably never finish the thing. But then I did finish the thing and speak. It's very interesting.
Did you have any idea what you were getting into?
But I'm kind of done with the thing. Well, no, here we are, whatever this is, 5 years later. And it's been a roller coaster ride to get this book out into the world. I think they all are, though. Do you find that when you talk to authors? Nobody says, well, yes, I wrote this thing and I submitted it. And what do you know, a year later, there it was published. Yeah, does anyone ever say?
And you're always still working on it. And, you know, if my friend hadn't said, it's done, I would never have been done. I was like, what do you mean it's done? She's like, no, that's it. No more writing. No more fixing. I was like, I would never have done it because I thought it needed more work always, you know. But when you finished it in 2018-19, what did you do with it? Like, where did you go with it?
Well, I had two sources I wanted to read it. One is my daughter. Mm-hmm. She's a writer, and I knew she would be kind but honest about what she was reading, what she thought about it. And I had a fellow writing friend who was kind of a big cheerleader. She was just pushing me, saying, stop saying you're not going to finish this. You need to finish this book. So once I thought it was decent enough that I could risk sharing it with those two people, then I decided, okay, I'll call it my completed draft. And so if I call it my completed draft and give myself permission to know that it still needs work, then I can start to share it. So I did with both of them.
So seen it?
No one even knew I was doing this.
Even your husband? No.
Well, my husband knew I was fooling around with kind of writing a book, and I'd say, he never asked me because I never brought it up. I didn't want to talk about it. It was like, who do you think you are writing a book? Yeah. You writing a book? What's going on here? But because of my daughter, really, she was the one who said, after she read it and said, no, this this is good. This has promise. You really need to stick with it and finish this thing and try to get it published. Otherwise, and my friend, my other friend was kind of saying the same thing. Otherwise, I honestly, it would be still living on my computer. In fact, I was so secretive about my writing that I stored all my writing, this book and everything else, in a file called Miscellaneous Beet Recipes. So that if I got hit by a car,
beet.
So if I got hit by a truck or something and someone had to get in my computer, they wouldn't even know to look in beet recipes for my writing because I didn't want anybody to find it.
Because you thought you were afraid it wasn't good?
I was afraid it wasn't good. And I was afraid I wouldn't have had my last little twist. You know, it was a lot of it was still pretty messy. And I just thought I better keep this under wraps.
Wow. That's great. That's I like that, beet recipes.
Who wants to read a beet recipe? No one.
Yeah, right. All right. So let's go back a little. Well, we could go forward. All right, let's go forward. Then we'll go back. So once you gave it to your daughter, I mean, that must have taken a lot to give it to someone when you hadn't told anyone you were doing it. But what happened after that? They read it. They said, okay, it has promise. And then what'd you do?
Well, I will say I had coffee with my friend and she had already, she marked it up. She had a lot of comments, but she said, here's the thing. I went on vacation and I took your stapled together pieces of paper and I took a completed novel by a well-known writer to read on my vacation. And I kept reading yours. I didn't go to hers. So I was like, well, that makes me hopeful.
Yeah.
And after my daughter finished reading it, I mean, she's my daughter, so she was very sweet, but she called me and said, Mommy, your book is beautiful. And so that meant so much to me. And then she helped me, you know, after I was crying and saying, oh, thank you. I said, let's talk about it. You know, what do you see that it needs and what should I think about changing and blah, blah, blah. So we did that. So I revised it myself. And then I decided before I submitted it to any agents or any publishers, I thought I really wanted a professional editor to have a look at it. So I did hire a freelance editor to go through it. And like there were some basic things she told me. I hadn't realized when I wasn't looking, the world of fiction changed and you didn't do third person omniscient narration anymore. I didn't. Have you noticed that? I didn't notice that. Yeah, it went right over my head. So the whole book was initially in third person. And she said, no, you can't do that. She goes, you need to take it out and put it from the point of view of the different characters instead of just one narrator who knows all. So I had to rewrite the book from that point of view, which was
Like Ruth's point of view or...
Yes, Ruth, David.
Whoever. So it's not, they're not saying I, but right. It's from Ruth's point of view. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I was aware of that because I don't write fiction. So that's why.
Yeah. Yeah.
David. Yeah. Okay. David rested his forehead. Yeah. I see. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So then you had to rewrite it that way. And then when you said editor, because this was something I didn't know that there were editors.
Yeah.
There were people who looked at typos, but what I needed was a copy editor.
A copy editor.
And they really look at the whole thing and does it flow and all that. That's what I was looking for. But I paid an editor to do typos way before it was ever necessary because I didn't know that there were two different things at the beginning. You know, you learn.
Yes, you learn.
Make mistakes.
Exactly. And it wastes money.
More expensive than others, right? Yeah.
No, I didn't know that either. But my writer friend had used a developmental editor for her book.
Oh.
And she really liked this woman and said, I think you should have her take a look at it. She's great. And she's, you know, she's kind and she'll really help you. And she helped me a lot. She helped me a lot.
So was that the editor that you just said about that told you about the first person?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so cool. So she and I worked together and revised the draft. Mm-hmm. And then I started submitting the book to agents. Did you do that? Submit to agents.
Did you need a proposal, a book proposal?
Well, it's different with fiction, I learned. I did not know this either. Oh. But with fiction, with nonfiction, you need a proposal. Yeah. And you don't necessarily need a completed manuscript. You need enough of an outline and a proposal that they can tell what you're going to write, and then they decide yes, no, maybe. With okay. fiction, you have to have a completed book, and it's supposed to be as close to perfect as possible.
Oh.
And then you submit a query letter, which is a synopsis, right. You know, all that. Yeah. So I submitted to a few agents, and I went to the Westport Writers Workshop, had a pitch and publish conference. Mm. Did you ever go to any of those?
You know, I went to the Westport Writers Workshop when it was still owned by Jessica Bram.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I worked with her. I was in her, that's how, when I wrote it, and then I thought I was, so I thought I was going to publish it, and, you know, thought I was done. And people, I went to a couple people, and they were like, do you know Jessica Bram? I was like, no. They were like, well, she has a writing workshop. And I was like, insulted, you know, like, I've already written my book, you know? So anyway, when the second person told me about Jessica, I was like, all right, fine.
I okay, called her. Jessica. I hear you.
Yeah. And I think I was in her classes for 5 years. So we would write, we would read a chapter out loud, and the group, you know, it was a group class, and people would comment, and then you'd rewrite it. So I literally just had different chapters for all those years, working with Jessica. And then she sold it to the next person. You know, she was the one that started the whole thing.
Yeah, which, yeah.
Anyway, so then she sold it to someone, and then I stopped. But then I had all these separate chapters, and like, what do you do with this? I didn't know how to put them together, you know?
That's
so
hard.
I hired one person, you know, she was the one that told me, you know, she read my book. This is my first book. This is one that took 7 years. It's called The Second Piece of French Toast. If marriage was my dream, why was I numbing myself? So she was the one that said to me, you know, why weren't you responsible for yourself? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whoa. I was like, whoa, if you're going to be like that, I'm not working with you. And she goes, well, why didn't you speak up? And I was like,
did you say to her, did you read my book? Did you say to her, I think the answer is in my book, right?
No, I didn't speak up. I did not speak up, but I didn't know. I didn't even know I didn't speak up. So, you know, my second book was about that. What it was about real talk. Like, how, cause I was like a people pleasing, pleasant, you know, I'll say phony because I was just like this. And I didn't speak up. Or when I did, I probably did, but it didn't make a difference when I was married. You know, we were just, you know, looking back, you can always see what you could have done differently, but it didn't seem to matter if I did or I didn't, you know, if I did, you know, anyway, and that's all in the book. But when she asked me that, that was a pivotal question, because then I got to look and go deeper and find out, you know, I was a sensitive child, and I found Gabor Mate, who talked about when you're a sensitive child, you become someone other than yourself. And I think probably we all do, but that's, you know, what I heard at that time, like, because, and it's a dumb little story, but it, you know, it affects your life. When I was upset when I was young, and my mother said, don't be upset. But I was. So now I can't be who I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I became fine. And I didn't want to let anyone know when I was upset. You know, mm-hmm. So that was just, and eventually you get to that, you don't even know you're upset, you know?
No.
So it was really like being able to speak up about that was buried. Do you know what I mean? So it was so interesting after she told me that, because, you know, my book was a memoir, so it wasn't fiction. It was my life. And it really had me look deeper and learn a lot more based on that one comment, you know. And then I found this other woman, her name is Willa, and she, cause I didn't know where to go after that. And I know this isn't about me, but I'll just tell you my story. So I knew Willa's father was this famous guy in Canada, someone Mitchell. Anyway, he was this famous writer, and she had been a writer. And I said, Willa, will you help me with my book? And she said, no. She said no for like a year. And she, cause she didn't do that. And finally I was like, please. So she did. And now I've launched her. She has this whole writing business now because of me. And I'm always like, I definitely get credit for that because you said no.
Yes.
You know? And now she has this, she just retreats, and she's helped a whole bunch of more people do their books. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, so
I feel
wonderful.
Responsible. Yeah.
Well, you should
so
feel
she's
responsible.
Helping. And she's the one that said, okay, it's done. But then, you know, again, this is my, not your story, but then I didn't know. So if you had a publisher, that was different. I didn't have an agent. I mean, I did submit it to a company and they were like, if you're not famous, no one's going to publish your memoir. So then I decided, okay, you know, after I had taken months to do this book proposal and read books that were, you know, anyway, whatever, each step was learning, but then I had to find a formatter. I didn't even know what that was. I found one, you know, after months. I had to do a cover. I mean, all these things that I didn't know how to do. And eventually I published it on Amazon. So I think that was a different route than yours, right? So when you submitted your letters, what happened after that?
Well, it depends, you know, different results. Most of the time, most agents just ignore you. I mean, they have more people to deal with than they can deal with. So they just,
oh, they don't even say no.
They don't even say no. They don't say anything. You know, I signed up for a few classes. Oops, sorry about that phone. I signed up for a few classes where they kind of had to talk to me, and then they would give, and then they would give you advice. Sorry about that.
No, now mine's ringing. Isn't that funny?
Oh gosh. Well, busy phones.
Can I call you later? Right. Do not disturb. There we go. I had my computer on it, but it didn't do my phone. Okay.
Yeah, I know. That was my landline, which never rings. So of course, no one rings. Need to take it out, throw it away.
Yeah.
But so you know, it was kind of discouraging. But one thing that was really eye opening for me, one of the people I submitted the query letter to and actually asked for the manuscript, read the manuscript, and she said to me, "Well, you have a problem. If you want to sell books, if you want to sell this book, you have to do two things. You have to take all the God stuff out of there. And you have to put a lot more sex in there. And then you might have a book that can sell. But if you don't care whether this is a bestseller, if you want to write a book that is from your heart, that you can someday say to your grandkids, hey grandkids, this is Nani's book. This is the book I wrote. And be be proud of it.
Yeah.
You write the book that's true to you." Well, that was so easy for me to answer. I had to write the book that was true to me.
Yeah.
So I did, and I had a publisher, and then that publishing company went out of business before my book came out. I know, right?
Did they say sorry at least?
Kind of. It's a long, messy story. It's really awful. Worse for them than for me, obviously. Terrible for them. But then out of that, I got an agent, and then I got a different publisher and we moved in this direction and now it's happening.
Wow. You know, I think the message for people is it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be how you think it is.
No.
And if you're committed, you get through. Like your publisher went, you know, you could have quit, but you didn't. Like it takes something. It takes years. It might take years. It might take, you know, lots of chances. But if when things like that happen, it doesn't mean it's because you're not supposed to write it. It means, hey, here's another hurdle to just get over and go around and ask for help. And, you know, you're not alone and everyone goes through this, you know?
I think that's a really good point that you just made. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't mean it's not supposed to happen. It doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong. It means, okay, that door closed. Now where do I go? And right. The two people, my daughter and my friend, Caroline, who were both helping me, were very clear about that. This does not mean this book is not supposed to exist. It means this is not the way it's going to exist. So try something else. Try this.
Just try something else. I think so many times we get stopped. I know in other endeavors, I definitely got stopped by things when they didn't go, you know, but with this, for some reason I didn't, you know, and you didn't either. And I guess you had cheerleaders. You know what? When I went to the Westport Writers Workshop, I had cheerleaders. I had people that said, yes, people need to hear this. We can relate to this. This is very, it was very courageous.
It is very courageous.
People didn't talk about what I talked about, you know?
Yeah.
I love that. Try something else. Okay, good. Yay. Mm-hmm. Now, I just want to ask for a second. I know your daughter has written, they said she was writing her fifth book. What kind of books does she write?
She's laughing. She's probably writing her fifth book. She has one book that's out in the world. It was Bloomsbury has a series called Object Lessons, where a writer takes an object and writes about it from every angle, the history, how it's used in culture, what kind of symbol it might be, how it's used in the author's life. And she picked stroller because she was a mom with young kids. And it's a really cool book, I have to say.
Oh, what's the name?
It's called Stroller. And it's, As Bill said the other night, it was named by the New Yorker as one of the best books of 2022. So that's really amazing.
And what's her name? I know it's Amanda.
Her name is Amanda Parrish Morgan.
Okay. Amanda Parrish. So if you want to read the stroller, Amanda Parrish Morgan. Okay, good. Wow. That's so cool. Yeah, because she was, she seemed just so natural about writing and what she was asking, you know, like it seemed like it was her comfort zone.
Oh, absolutely.
That writer's world. But she write articles and stuff too?
Oh, like, yeah. She's written essays and short stories and she's written a ton. And she also teaches writing at Fairfield U, and she's taught it in high schools and she teaches it privately. So she's very comfortable in that world for sure.
Being a writer. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, good. All right. So back to you. So then you got the new publisher, and then when did you, I think I could say Moss Media, right? That's how I found you.
Yeah.
And they're right in Westport, right?
They're right in Westport. I met Meryl at one of those pitch and publish conferences. Oh, she was talking about the PR services they offer, and I had a great conversation with her. And at the time I was with the little bitty publisher, and they have no budget for publicity, no budget at all. So I knew if I was going to do anything with publicity, I was going to have to pay for it myself. So, and I was impressed with Meryl. I thought she seemed like she really knew what she was doing. So I hired them to do a little bit with that other book. And then when that all fell apart, Meryl and I had several conversations along the way that they would like to add to their publishing services, a traditional publishing branch. And she said, after my other thing fell apart and we'd submitted to a few places, my agent and I got lovely, lovely rejections, but nobody picked it up.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
At least they responded.
Right? At least they were nice. Yeah. Meryl said, we'd love to publish you. So think about it. And I thought about it and they were so good to work with. I thought, yeah, this is the other way. This other door that closed, now this door has opened. So I'm going to go through that door.
Now, I don't know how, I remember when I had my first book and, you know, when the person said, you know, do you know Jessica? And I met someone in PR and I was like, oh, I think I need you. And I don't know if it was them. I don't know who it was. And they were like, you can't afford us. And I was like, oh. Like, I didn't even know what PR was. Like, I was just not, we won't say ignorant, we'll say naive. I didn't know. So did you, and if you don't want to answer this, it's fine. Like, did you have to pay them to publish it or did they just publish it?
No, I didn't pay them to publish it, but I do pay them for their publicity services.
Okay.
And they offer, I think this is true for everyone. This is just my experience. They have a menu of services that they offer and you can decide, yes, I would like to have this. No, I don't want to do that. Yes, I'll take this.
Oh.
One I was really interested in at the very beginning was social media because I had zero social media presence. I mean, I wasn't even on anything. And you kind of have to be. But I didn't, I didn't really know how to do it. And honestly, I wasn't that interested in doing it. But everybody kept saying, you have to. So I hired them to help me with that. And then I got to know the people working over there and they're all just so good.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. And they, cause when I, did my first book and then I had a book talk and I did it myself. It was over in Fairfield at a pizza place and I invited all my friends and I had this big box of books and I had told everybody, right? I had this big box of books and I was so afraid I was going to run out of books, right? Well, the people who came, and I don't know, maybe there were six or seven of them, they had already read the book. I mean, they were my friends.
Oh, they already bought the book.
They had already read it. So I sold nothing. And I remember, you know, I put on a good face, you know, my people-pleasing, pleasant, phony face throughout the whole thing. And I got in my car and I just cried and cried and cried because, you know, I thought, well, I'm going to be a bestseller, you know, after like a month, right? And I just felt so embarrassed and so stupid that I didn't, and I think it was right before COVID. It might have even been February, right before COVID, but I didn't really try again. I mean, maybe a couple of half-hearted tries, but it really took the wind out of my sails.
Oh gosh, yes.
And I think, you know, I just did a paper on failure. Like turning failure into play or using failure as a growth opportunity. And I got to look at that incident and realize, well, that was really traumatic because I had such expectations, you know, obviously unrealistic, but, you know, all these people said they were coming and then they didn't, you know, and whatever. And okay, it was my first time. Like when I did the paper, I got to kind of process it and say, well, I didn't know how to do it. I had never done it. I could have asked people how to, you know, I could have done a lot of different things. I could have not stopped, but I wasn't, here I go crying, but I had considered myself a failure. Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, I went from published author, yay, look what I did. I didn't quit, to failure. And I, by writing that paper, I got to just see, no, I'm not a failure. I published a book. Now I published three. Like, that's not actually a failure.
Oh, I had heavens a failed, no.
It wasn't even a failed book talk. I had my, you know, my best friends come. So it wasn't even a failure, but I got to conceptualize the night, sorry, now I'm crying, into something other than failure and realize, you know what? I could have had another one. I could have done a lot of different things. But so when I walked into yours, so just to paint the picture, I walked into the library, the Westport Library, and it was this huge room and all this noise. And they had this huge screen. Now it had like a, it seemed like it had a political thing on there. So I thought I was in the wrong place. I thought maybe you were going to be in a little room and this was something else. And so when I went to ask, where's the book talk? They're like, that's it. Isn't that amazing? So to Diane's credit, she did it differently than me. Maybe it cost her some money, but this room was packed. They had this huge screen of Diane and her daughter and the name and the book cover, and people were there and they sold books and you got to have this amazing talk. And I was like, I have to say, I wasn't jealous. I was, what's the word? I was amazed that
well, me too.
That well. And, you know, I could tell at the end that you were moved to say, wow, thank you all for coming. And these were people from your church. These were people from walks of life. Your daughter had teacher, you know, and so, you know, that it can be that way. Like it can be that way. And looking at it now, I can see you had professionals do it.
Well, I
it
had
professionally organized, you know,
I definitely had help getting
yeah.
the word out from them and from my daughter and her friends, and my husband was getting the word out and I was trying to get the word out. I had absolutely no idea that's what that room would look like. Absolutely no idea. And I'll tell you, I mean,
who did it? Like who did that big, huge,
that was the library. So cool. That was the library. When I booked the room at the library.
Oh my God, that was beautiful.
Wasn't that gorgeous?
Oh,
wasn't that gorgeous? They did that.
So it's like how many stories up? I mean, this is a room just so people can get the impression. It's a library, but they have like, it's almost like a theater hall.
It is.
Like,
it is.
It's like a speaker's place. And so they had this screen that must have gone up three stories of Diane's face and her daughter's face and more than life-size picture of the book.
More than life-size picture, yes.
It was
That's what they do. My husband does some volunteer work for the library. He holds more or less on a monthly basis. He's in conversation with people, famous people, not nobody's like me, but famous people who have books coming out. He's going to speak next Tuesday with Ken Feinberg, who I don't know if that name rings a bell. He was in charge of the September 11th distribution fund.
Oh my God.
Deciding what each life was worth.
Ugh.
Ugh. And he's written a book about it, which, so Steve is going to be talking with him about that.
Right.
So we knew what is possible, what the library can do with that amazing space that they have. But I had no idea it was going to be like that. Absolutely no idea. I mean, people kept saying, I'm coming. But you know, people say that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, thank you. That's great. Yeah. I didn't really think they would, honestly, but they did.
Wow.
Now I'll tell you this though, Hillary, this is funny. So Tuesday night, the room was packed. Yeah. My heart was soaring around the top of the ceiling. It was the most amazing night of my life. I'm not going to say where, but last night we had another event very close on the heels of that one. And you know how many people came? Zero. No one.
Oh, wow.
No one. It was a tiny little space, and they were absolutely lovely people. And they had tried to get the word out, and we had tried to get the word out. Now, my take on it is it was too close in time, yeah, too close in geography to the other big event. And that's why nobody came. But I was, unlike you, when you were, I would have been crying on the way home if Tuesday hadn't just happened.
Right.
On the way home, I was actually kind of laughing, going, just don't get too full of yourself, girl. Because that was one night. This is another night. Any night, anything can happen.
So it was Thursday. So it was two nights later. Yeah. Well, maybe it just wasn't publicized as much, you know?
Who knows?
I didn't even really know about it. Wow.
No.
I would have come. I would have brought my mother. I had my mother last night. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
When I called the library, and I'm not bitter, but you know, I grew up in Westport. I've lived here my whole life. And when I called them, they let me do something. We had it scheduled for the first book, and then COVID happened. And so I did it with Jessica. She was my whatever you call it, the person who asked the questions. So we did it on Zoom, and you know, Zoom was new and stuff like that. When I called up about the second book or the third book, they were like, oh no, we're booked. We can't possibly get you in until January. I'm like, well, that's fine. And they were like, well, no, it'll be too old then. And I was like, oh, I'm getting the brush off here. So then I was like, well, Diane got in, you know. How did Diane kind of, but then when they said, and I'm not saying this is why, but you know, your husband very involved with the library. Of course, you know, but I was kind of like, whew, but you know, the Stratford Library let me do it. They'd let me do it all the time. They're a work client. And so it's really like, you're not a hero in your own town or whatever, but I just thought that was interesting. So, but I didn't have any jealousy. I was happy for you, which is you know, that's growth. That's growth, right? Because it was just so phenomenal, you know? But it's good to see, like, what can happen, you know? But
yeah,
it's almost been the library publicity maybe was bigger and better than the second place, too.
I think it was all firing on all fronts. The library had publicity. The publisher had publicity. My social media, I mean, we were just blasting it everywhere.
Yeah. And that was the first day your book was released too.
The day.
Wow. So cool. All right. Well, this is fun.
Yeah, it is.
All right. So we're going to go to our commercial break with a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back. All right. See you in a minute.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to RealTalkWithHillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
you, as always, to our sponsor, KokoriApp.com. So, you know, if you want to bring social-emotional learning, this is experiential social-emotional learning. And this makes such a difference to all ages. I've done some of the activities. My daughter works for the company, and it just has you feel connected again. And I'll give a little preview. So this is my third book, and it talks about the two sides of life. And the one where you feel disconnected, kind of hopeless, things don't look good. You know, Diane could have felt that way when her first publisher went under, but she didn't. But let's just say, you know, sometimes in the past when I wasn't aware, I got stuck on that side. This book talks about the other side of life, where it's fun, where you're connected, where anything's possible, where you're excited about life. Kokori, just to go back to them, they bring you to that other side, and they bring your children, and they get connected, and they get social through these activities. So if you'd like to bring it to your schools, which I totally recommend, to your businesses, to your teams, go to KokoriApp.com. It's a platform. It's not an app. I was corrected. It's a social, it's an experiential social emotional learning platform. KokoriApp.com. Okay. And then for my books, as we were talking about, this was my memoir, The Second Piece of French Toast. If you are maybe in a situation, maybe in a marriage where you just didn't think it was gonna be that way, read this. It might inspire you. And I wrote it so that in case anybody else was in the situation I was in, you can have hope. Okay. This book, again, Two Sides of Life, Techniques for Getting Back to the Fun Side of Life, just a little quicker. And then this one, we've also talked about Real Talk. This is when I realized I wasn't speaking up. I was a people pleaser. And this taught me how to do it. There's a getting real process. This one has its own website, realtalkwithhillary.com. And the others, you can find them all on Amazon. So thank you for that. I write because I'm committed to people having freedom to create lives they love. I'm also committed to people, to all of us, elevating the conversation and consciousness of the planet. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And that's why I have people like Diane, who are going to come back to the stage. Woo! Well, studio. We'll call it a studio. All right. Now, the other night you were talking about how you started, and you started with characters before the plot, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where did they come from? I mean, were you thinking of writing, or you just started getting these people in your mind?
Well, the truth is I'm always writing. I've always been doing creative writing from the time I was a little girl. I used to write stories all the time.
Oh.
I wrote books. I wrote a lot. But I never had the time to devote to writing more than catch as catch can, a little here, a little there.
Did you have another career before you got married or anything like that? Like, what did you go to college for?
Well, I went to college. I was a dental hygienist. I have a bachelor's degree in dental hygiene. I did that for a couple of years. Then I went to law school, and I practiced law for several years.
Wow.
And then Steve and I were married, and we had a young child. And he had the opportunity to work in Switzerland. So we lived in Switzerland for a couple of years, which was an amazing experience.
With the baby, right? You had the baby.
By then she was a kindergartner. So yes, we were over there then.
Oh.
And that gave me the opportunity to learn some French and do some traveling. Then we moved back to, his job took him back to the New York City area. So we came to Westport then. At that time, we had a brand new baby as well as our older daughter.
Okay.
So that's when we came to Westport. And I always did some writing. I would submit an essay here and there, or, you know, write a short story here and there. But I never really got serious about the book until some events were happening in my real life that I was observing about the importance of forgiveness and what lack of forgiveness.
Yeah, before we go there, I just, something stuck in my brain because my father was a dentist. What's the connection from dental hygienist to law school?
Absolutely nothing.
Like, that's quite a leap from two.
Well, here's what it is. Here's what it is. I found that I was not loving dental hygiene. So I went to a career counselor and she gave me a skills and interest inventory. And at the end of the skills and interests inventory, you know, it came out that the things I enjoyed most were writing, reading, analysis, a couple, I don't remember the others. And the, so they listed the careers that might work with that. And at the top of the list was law school. I didn't have any lawyers in my family. I wasn't really quite sure what I would do as a lawyer, but it seemed interesting. So I applied and got into law school. I kind of had this half.
Where did you go?
University of Kansas. That's where we lived then.
So you were already married.
I was married to someone else at the time. I've been divorced, but now Steve and I've been married for 42 years. So I had a mini marriage when I was married.
So Kansas, okay. So Kansas was with the first guy, and then that's where you went to
law school.
Law school. Oh, and then okay. So then when do you meet Steve?
After law school, when I was working at the law firm, he and I were in the same law firm in Kansas City. That's where we met. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ah, wow. Oh, so you met him at the law firm. How cool. Mm-hmm. So then after that, is that when you moved to Switzerland from Kansas?
We moved to Switzerland from Kansas and then from Switzerland to Westport. And that's where we've been since then.
And where did you grow up?
My family moved a ton. I grew up in all over the Midwest, okay. Different places in Missouri, different places in Kansas. I lived for a while in North Dakota. So we bopped around.
For your father's job?
Yeah, for my father's job.
Who did he work for?
He was in insurance, and we tended to move every 2 or 3 years, which is interesting.
Yeah, insurance, you don't usually move.
Well, he was with a big insurance company, and they wanted to open new territories. And my dad seemed to have a skill for that. So they would always say, hey, you go here. And, you know, in the 60s, when your company says, hey, you go here, you go there.
Yeah. Well, he was good at it, obviously.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Interesting. So I thought at first when you said that it was military, but obviously not if you were just in the Midwest.
No, just in the Midwest.
That's not where the
No overseas postings or anything like that. No.
Cool. Oh, that's so cool. Okay. So good. So far we've gotten so that, because one guy, I told something about the book that he didn't want me to say, and he was kind of bad. So we haven't talked about the book, so I haven't been able to give away any secrets yet.
We have not given away any secrets at all.
So anyway, okay. I wanted to ask about the title, because I have read the book, Something Better. Where did you, well, we were talking about the, I know I interrupted you about whatever. So we were talking about the characters, how, okay, you had been, I had asked you about that. Then we'll go to the title. So you said you were always been writing. So when these characters came to you, like, how did that happen?
You know, that's a mysterious process. They came to me wholly formed. I mean, I saw what they looked like physically. I knew what they were like in terms of their personality, in terms of their character, in terms of what they cared about. I just knew them. I just knew them.
Now, did you know, like, that Ruth was married to David?
Yeah, I saw them.
Did you know they were in the same book?
I knew they were in the same book, and I knew who they were, and I knew that the story I was going to write around them was going to center on the notion of forgiveness. Okay. And then I started thinking about, you know, what you've observed in your own life about times when forgiveness plays out well, times when it doesn't, what kinds of things give rise to the need for forgiveness. And I started constructing a plot around that. I wanted, the characters were the most important, and I love literary fiction. It's my favorite kind of book to read. But a lot of literary fiction doesn't have a whole lot of a plot. It's so involved with the characters and their relationship with each other that not much happens. Mm. Like, I won't name any names, but a lot of books that are, well, that do very well, there's not a lot of action. And I thought I wanted a book that would be focused on the characters, focused on the theme of forgiveness, but also have stuff happen. So. Yeah. I started concocting a plot where things actually happened.
So the beginning of the book, which is, you know, you're just like, whoa, when did that get gelled? Was that like, an afterthought, or was that like from the beginning?
Well, I knew that was going to be a part of the book, but I wasn't quite sure where to put it. And in my early draft, it wasn't the first thing. It came after we met Annabeth, and she was, I started initially more with Annabeth's backstory. And then the first editor that I mentioned said, I think you should just jump in with both feet and start with the accident. And once she liberated me, that felt, as soon as she said that, I thought, yeah, that's what I want to do. And then I started writing the scene. And because it could be sort of a standalone scene, I could just make it be itself. Mm-hmm. And I just, that was so fun to write. Yeah.
That definitely grabs you. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know, I mean, I could say this because you find out in the next page, I didn't know if they died or not. I was hoping that they didn't, you know, for a long time. But then I'm like, okay, they're in a book. She wrote it. It's not real. You can let that go, you know? You know, you feel bad. They were so happy. Well,
that's a compliment that you feel bad already that they're gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were so delightful.
They were so delightful.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And the annoying characters in my book, there are a couple of really annoying characters in my book. But I kind of love them too. I love, you know, I loved all of them.
Well, I kept thinking, like, even on Tuesday night, I'm like, why didn't they just stay at the host's place? They didn't have to drive home that night, you know, but I'm like, all right, this is a book. It's already happened. She's not rewriting it, you know, like, let that go. But I really wanted them to, I really wanted it to, but anyway, it's life, right? You can't undo stuff like that. Absolutely. Now, I don't know if you want to talk about, I know you had said Tuesday that it wasn't your forgiveness that you were observing. Like, it wasn't stuff that happened to you. It was that happened to people around you. Mm-hmm. What fascinated you by that?
Well, the one in my family I was very close to. So the one situation where the people were not able to forgive each other and reconcile before one of them died was, I was close to those people. And that was just so painful. I still think, why couldn't that have worked out? It was, that was really, really hard. And then the other example where it did was inspiring and also kind of mind-blowing, because there was some public shame involved and embarrassment in that situation. Yeah. And it was as if these people moved beyond that. They moved beyond public opinion to a deeper place in their own relationship, and somehow found the love or the grace, whatever word you want to use, mm-hmm. to forgive each other and build a new relationship that was actually better than the one they had before.
Wow.
And that just, I was so impressed by that. And really, I kept thinking, could I do what they did? I mean, you like to think.
Yeah.
Of course I could do that. But you don't know. I mean, you hope you could, and you want to believe you could. So I wanted to write those two situations made it so clear to me how important forgiveness is, how absolutely vital forgiveness is. And I wanted to write a book that looked at it from a whole bunch of different perspectives and a whole bunch of different people's lenses. And so that's what I tried to do.
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's really, I was just reading another book. It was fiction, but when the husband just leaves and he's having an affair with, anyway, and the father said, well, why don't you look at your own part to the wife, you know, his daughter. And she was like, no. But then she starts looking, you know, seeing if she can be responsible for her part. You know, I think that's part of it, is being responsible for your own part and what might have happened, even if you weren't the one, even if you were the victim, you know, not. Anyway, it's interesting.
It is. I mean, in no way, I mean, I have Ruth do that in the book, as you know, but in no way am I blaming Ruth. In no way am I saying what happened is her fault. But because she's a sentient adult, when this circumstance occurs in her marriage, she has to rethink everything that led up to that moment. And so it doesn't happen. If everybody's firing on all cylinders, working as hard as they can to keep it together, it's not going to happen. But if people take each other for granted or get a little careless or don't tend the relationship, then it's not going to make it.
Right. And I remember you saying that your husband traveled and you, it was before cell phones, it was before all that stuff. You really had to make an effort to stay in touch. And I think that was so valuable.
Yeah. Well, you know, I will say we both had been married before. So we, I don't know. I like to think if we'd met each other first, we would have already figured it out, but I don't know. Having been through what's unpleasant about a divorce, I think we both were really committed to not doing that again. That's not fun.
Yeah. Wow. Whew. Yeah. It takes something, you know? Mm-hmm. So, okay. See, I'm being good. I'm not saying anything about the book, which I really want to. But, so I have two questions, and then we got to wrap it up. So one is the title. Mm-hmm. The other is when you said the other night that you know, because you know what happens next. She kind of, I don't know if I could say, leaves you wondering. I'll put it that way.
I do.
You know what would happen next. Are you going to write about that?
I might.
Not very many people
have read the book yet, but a lot of people have. The people who read the book, several people have said to me, I hope you're going to write a sequel about these people. I might do it. Well, the title, Something Better, and the ending are both open-ended. Because as we go through the book, there are lots of opportunities to look at one decision or another decision. Is that the something better? Is that the something better? And so I chose that title because it's up to the character and the reader to decide what is the something better? Where does the something better lie? So that was intentionally ambiguous.
Okay, good.
And the ending is open-ended too, because I wanted to capture this moment where they've made some decisions about what they value and what they're going to prioritize. But I didn't want it to be an easy, therefore, all is well, because it doesn't work that way. You know, you can decide where you need to be and what you absolutely value, but it takes time to do all that healing. Or not. It doesn't always work to do all that healing.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to cut it off right there so that the reader could also be thinking, oh gosh, how are they going to do
it? I was like, wait. That's the end? Like, what do you mean? You're not going to tell me what happened?
Well, I would say, as I said to another friend, I left some breadcrumbs. So I think there's some hints about where they're going to be, but they aren't there yet.
Yeah. I'm just looking at, I was like, wait, now this is the acknowledgement? What do you mean? No, but it was great. And as you said, you like those kind of books. So it does make you think. And I wanted to be lazy and have you tell me how it ended. But I'm excited to learn that there'll be a second one. So, all right. So we actually have to wrap up. So anyway, so Diane Parrish, her debut novel, Something Better. You can find it anywhere books are sold. It's such a great read. It would be such a great gift for, you know, Christmas, birthdays, anything, and definitely get it for yourself. But how would you like to end? What would you like to leave the audience with in terms of your vision or the message, you know?
The message in the book and the message I'd like to leave with the audience is finding the way to forgive is always worth it. It's always worth it. It's healing for the person who does the forgiving and the person who receives the forgiving. And even if it's hard and even if it takes a long time, it's absolutely worth it.
That's beautiful. Yeah, it's not, what is it someone said? I don't know if it was forgiveness, but it's like not forgiving someone is like you taking the poison.
I think it was Annie Lamott. I think she said not forgiving is like taking rat poison and waiting for the rat to die. Right?
Yeah. Right. It's actually hurting you.
Yes.
The other person doesn't need, like you had said the other night, they might not even know that you have this going on. It's not affecting them in the least. It's really hurting you and it's poisoning your own soul. So
Absolutely. Yeah. That is exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that wonderful message. It was so, so great to meet you, a person in my own town. And
it's great to meet you and talk with you today. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And let me know. I know I had a postcard with your next book talk. Do you know when the next one is? I don't know when this will actually get published, but
We're going to
find out when your next one
is. It's on my website, dianeparish.com. Okay. And off the top of my head, I think the next in-person event is next week at Barrett Books in Darien.
Okay. All right, good. So Diane is D-I-A-N-E. Mm-hmm. Parish is with two R's, P-A-R-R-I-S-H.
Yes. I just did the screen.
Yeah, there. Okay, good. And .com. And you can find out everything about Diane, encourage her. She's a brand new author, and we're just so excited for you and your success. Thank you.
Thank you, Hillary. Thanks so much.
All right. Awesome.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started Getting Real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.